Welcome to The Edges of Lean. I'm Bella Engelbach, and in this podcast, we explore the human and creative side of lean thinking, unusual places where lean thinking is practiced. We meet people who are practicing continuous improvement in many different flavors and styles. So come along with me on a journey to the edges of lean. Episode 15, Continuous Improvement and Nonverbal Communication. As a manager, supervisor, or a continuous improvement facilitator or coach, you know that communication is a key skill for success and improvement. So, how are we communicating? We know what we say is important, right? And most of us would acknowledge that how we say it is important too. But think about this. You're still communicating even when you are not physically on the shop floor or in the room or even on the Zoom call. We're going to take a trip to the edges of lean and explore many aspects of nonverbal communication, even the ones that happen when you're not there. My guests are Shelley O'Donovan and Jason Haynes. Shelley O'Donovan is the CEO of the Authentic Influence Group. She teaches persuasive speaking at the Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania. She has led vaccine advocacy for GlaxoSmithKline, worked as a healthcare lobbyist, and served as a staffer in state government. She's been focused on cultivating authentic influence her entire career, and she loves to decode what makes people tick. Shelley has an MPA for the University of Pennsylvania, a marketing certification from the Wharton School, a BA in political science. She has a certification also in body language training and the Big Five personality from a behavioral research lab. Jason Haynes is a lean practitioner who uses standard work to help communication throughout the workplace, to help reduce chaos and frustration amongst frontline workers and between the frontline and leadership. Jason is a managing director with Industrial Solutions, based in Arizona, and he has worked in the manufacturing industry for over 20 years. He is a Lean Six Sigma Black Belt. He works with logistics, manufacturing, service companies, and office areas on developing lean processes. Shelley O'Donovan and Jason Haynes, welcome to the Edges of Lean.
How are you doing today?
Thank you.
I'm doing great, and it's wonderful to have you both here. So Jason, let's start with you. We're talking today about all the ways we communicate that we don't necessarily know that we communicate. And I'd love for you to tell your story. First of all, how did you get involved in what you're doing? And then we'll move on from there.
So a little bit about myself. I'm Jason Haynes from Industrial Solutions. We're a consulting firm that helps companies with their lean management practices and everything as far as going in, taking a look at everything as far as their processes and helping them improve those processes. And how I got into what I'm doing currently is I've got 20 years of manufacturing experience that I just kind of grew to love the manufacturing and industrial area within the whole field of, I just got to know a lot of people within the front line and in the front office and wanted to help them people to be able to communicate with each other. And when I was growing up, my father and my grandfather always told me not to go into manufacturing, and I ended up in manufacturing and grew to love it. And that's how I got into lean management and being part of the lean infrastructure as far as teaching people how to communicate with each other through not just nonverbal communication, but also how to teach other people how to do things so they don't have to find a leader to make those decisions. They can make the decisions on their own.
So you reached out to me actually with this story about standard work. And so can you just start, for those people who are listening, I'm sure a lot of people who are listening know all about standard work, but for those who aren't listening, describe for us what standard work is.
So standard work is visual workplace management, where front, in my mind, it's where frontline employees have something right there in front of them. So if they get lost within their process, they have a place to come back to, or they can take a look at that standard work to make sure they're on the right track and they're at the right pace within the area that they're working in. And also so they can just easily make those adjustments rather than having to stop their work, the supervisor or the leader of that area getting frustrated with them. And then you got two people frustrated at each other. And in my mind, that's where a lot of your employee turnover comes from, because that communication is not there. So with that standard work, you have something visually easy for those people to come up to. The funny thing is that the funny story about my first experience with standard work is I wrote an SOP. And I remember I was deflated from my manager when I wrote this SOP. He's like, this is too long. Nobody's going to read it. And that's where I started delving into finding out what standard work was, where it's more simplified, has pictures, because not going to lie, a lot of people do not want to see words or a lot of a lengthy worded process, especially when they're working. So they want those pictures to make it easy and a few words that kind of describes what that picture is saying to them.
Yeah, so my experience with, you know, with that kind of documentation is that, so you know, it's sort of, it is hard to read, or it's put in a place where you can't always find it. So what are your big takeaways about that?
You want to have it right there pretty much at you want to have it in front of the employee or even in front of the leader within that line. So it's right there in front of them. It makes it easier for them to find. You don't want to have it in the office. Like you, I know you guys have experienced probably with SOPs and stuff. They're usually in the office. They're usually about 3 inches thick and nobody reads them. They got dust on them. And usually the only time they come out is when there's a quality audit or something coming through your facility. And that's the big thing with standard work. You want it right there in front of the employee. That way it makes it easier for them to take a look at, just like even tracking boards, you want right there in front of the employee. So it's easy for them to take a look at, and it's easy for them to read and not have to run and go and find somebody to bring that out to them.
Yeah. So Shelley, I'd love to bring you into this. When we think about communication, you know, we do think a lot about, okay, so what am I saying? Right. And particularly if you're a leader on the shop floor, like Jason's talking about, or you know, somebody who's the manager coming through, a supervisor coming through, you think about what you're saying. How much more is there than what we just say?
Yeah, so there's a lot more. So we often, if you think even just about the first impression that someone makes, we often think it's, you know, if we go into a meeting that it's the first time we open our mouths, and it's not, it's the first time someone sees you. So even if you're headed to a meeting and on the way there, you stop for a cup of coffee at Wawa, if somebody spots you in that, you know, fumbling with your coffee or, you know, doing something crazy in that Wawa, that's going to be their first impression of you. So we really have to think about what those nonverbals are saying and how we communicate with our nonverbals. So as well, if you go into a stressful situation and, you know, you have a stressful situation and then you go into the office after that, that could leak out in your nonverbals. And someone on the other side of that could think, oh, what did I do? Right. An employee is there thinking, what did I do that day? Like what could I have done wrong that made the boss so angry? So it's really easy to have those nonverbals slip out and we don't even think about it because we're so worried on what we're going to say instead of how we're going to say it.
And I should explain for those folks who are not in the Philadelphia area or in the part of the world where Wawa is the center of the universe, that Wawa is the place to get coffee in the morning if you in the Philadelphia area, which Shelley and I both happen to be.
I was actually going to ask that. I didn't know if Wawa was just a made up name or if it was an actual area that you guys went to.
Very successful convenience store.
It's, yeah. So, but that's a great point because who you are, right? It's not just who you are in the workplace. Right. It's where people see you and what you're bringing in with you. And then Jason, I think, you know, when we're thinking about then how do we get that into some sort of written or visual communication? I'm wondering, does that leak over, right? So we're writing something down or we're helping somebody write something down or we're, you know, we're trying to give them instructions in picture format, perhaps, you know, how we're thinking about that. I'm wondering, you know, how we think about that as we're getting it communicated.
Yeah, I've never even thought of about it that in that sense, as far as getting it communicated. I know my very first standard work, I wasn't a very good with PowerPoint because, like I said, I came from working on the floor. So one of those things, you're learning PowerPoint on top of also trying to write a standard work process or a Word document or however you, whatever document you was using in order to make that standard work. Now I've got to the point where I understand Excel and PowerPoint and different things. So I know how to design that stuff. So yes, my very first one was probably very sloppy. And as Shelley was saying, sometimes that standard work, when it's sloppy, the employee's going to be kind of sloppy as far as what they're doing. It's funny that Shelley was talking about the people seeing you at first and what they understand. I talk a lot about my grandfather over the years as far as the stuff that he taught me. And one of the things he always taught us is people always see what you look like and judge you by what you look like or what you're doing before they judge you as far as what you say and everything. So it's usually make sure you're presentable. A funny story about him is his presentable was actually back in the day in order to get it. I don't know that he did this, but he always joked around that he would take his oldest shirt and oldest pants to go in and ask for a pay raise to make it look like he didn't have enough money to have a pay raise. So yes, the having it presentable, I think having something that's neat and clean and easy to read is very, very big as far as having that standard work out there and having it to help the people understand it. Because if it's sloppy, sometimes they're not even going to understand it just because it's all over the place.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Shelley.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting because I, as a communicator, I think we often, especially when we have employees working for us, sometimes we think, why can't they just get it? Like, what don't they understand, right? But there are so many different types of learners and people learn different ways. And so when you can marry that visual with something that's written, it just becomes a much more engaging piece of content that someone can actually get their brain around. So I think it makes perfect sense that you're thinking about those visual elements as well. And then, you know, you certainly layer in a good leader who can communicate well, and that just can take a team to the next level pretty easily.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the key, is just being able to make that communication. And a lot of a lot of places you go into, a lot of people talk about communication coming from the factory floor. It's always communication sucks here. And it's one of those things where you want to have that communication where everybody's talking to each other. And a lot of times people aren't talking to each other. They're usually talking across each other and not opening up those lines of communication to help each other out.
So Jason, the environment that you're talking about, I think, is the one that we in Lean are always aspiring for, which is that you have this mostly self-directed team, right? That is essentially taking care of each other and taking care of each other's work, helping each other out when there's a problem, helping each other solve the problem, being comfortable raising problems. And the standard work is a piece of that, because if you know what the standard work is, then you know when there's a problem, because a problem is when you are not able to achieve the standard work, right?
Yeah.
So Shelley, what is it that a leader can be doing in that kind of environment almost with their nonverbal behaviors to allow people to start to feel comfortable sharing and supporting each other?
Yeah, so there's a lot that can happen. So first of all, just having open body language. So we trust people more when they're open and actually when they talk with their hands. So years ago, I went in for an interview at Merck and I didn't know anything about the hand thing. And I was so nervous that I sat on my hands the whole time because I saw the interviewer across the table look at my hands when I was talking with them. So I put them under my seat the whole time and then didn't move them again. And that's really unfortunate because we trust people when we can see their hands. And that likens back to caveman times, because if you saw somebody, you wanted to know whether they had a weapon in their hand or not. So you were looking for their hands. And even though we're not really doing that consciously anymore, we do it subconsciously to see, like, can I see them? Can I trust them? And so having that open body language, using your hands and just communicating in a way that feels authentic to you. I tell people you can dial it up or you can dial it down. Some people are not really comfortable talking with their hands or motioning, but it is more interesting if you think about the people that you like to listen to on the news. Like, they have expressions on their face and they show emotion, and all of those things are laddered in, and it makes you want to listen to them. So if a leader can encompass some of those skills, that can help to really bring them to the next level of their leadership.
Yeah.
Jason, when you're working with folks on the manufacturing floor, what's the usual expectation in terms of sharing emotion, being sort of on the softer side of things?
I think the what I've learned over the years is just getting to know the people and getting to understand them outside of just what their job is, just kind of getting to understand them on a personal level and not becoming so ingrained into their life that you're going out to the bar after work at the end of the day, but to be able to just be able to communicate with them, have likenesses. Like, sometimes you might have the same sports team or the same books that you like to read. I mean, sometimes you find somebody, and this is the biggest reason I always love working with the people out on the floor. Sometimes, a lot of times, those people out on the floor are extremely smart people. They just are in a circumstance that they had to take a job at a factory. They might have had a kid at an early age. They might have to support a family. Their parents might be in the hospital, so they had to go take a job that they had to be able to do it. And that's what they're usually out on the floor for. And that's the biggest thing as far as just getting to know your employees and getting to understand what makes them tick and what helps them out. Because not going to lie, the biggest melting pot, I think, is actually on a factory floor or out on your main floor within a call center or something, just because there's so many people that have so many different personalities and likeness or likes and dislikes. And it's just one of those places you just want to get to know the people as far as getting out there.
That's really interesting. You know, when I'm thinking about, you know, people who, like you said, people working in a call center, people working on the factory floor, you know, we have so much conversation now about, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion. And a lot of times I think, you know, we're thinking about that sort of in the executive ranks, you know. And yeah. And certainly the, you know, the massive problems, you know, the higher you get in an organization, the less diversity you see. But you're right, Jason, the diversity is usually there at the place where the people are doing the real work. So Shelley, what does that mean then when you're moving in this probably a culturally diverse environment? And it's very interesting what you said about hands. I talk a lot with my hands, so that makes me feel a lot better. That's sort of an innate human characteristic that's probably independent of the culture you're raised in. But are there cultural differences that, you know, that your body language or the way you present yourself or speak that we might want to be aware of?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's many cultural differences, and you can see it, across different cultures. Certain cultures talk with their hands more, talk with their hands less, don't look at you when you talk. So just being aware of that, and certainly not pushing anybody to do something that they're not comfortable with, that doesn't feel right. But I also tell people that there's a part of body language that is learned, but it is a learned skill as well. So if you're someone who, always crosses their arms when they communicate, you can unlearn that behavior and just start in little ways changing that. So maybe it's when you're at home with your family, so it doesn't feel so weird, and you just try to kind of open up a little bit, but you're going to start to get received a little better, and you're actually going to have an easier time connecting with people if you put out those behaviors that kind of pull them in, because we all want to work with people we like, right? Like, you want to work with people you get along with, even if there's diversity of thought and they have different opinions. You at least want to be able to have a reasonable conversation about that. And so if you can portray those kind of open body language characteristics, it'll make that much easier to build that rapport with your employees or with your boss.
Yes. Yeah. And going off of what you're saying is, sometimes I have a problem with it, but I don't know if it's because of my face. Naturally, I don't smile all the time. I do have a smile, but it's not one of those ones that it's always on my face. But I remember talking with one of the guys that I was working with here recently, and he was asking about everybody. He feels like everybody hates him in a sense, and he was their supervisor, and he's naturally got that look on his face that's kind of gruff. So people are scared of him, basically. They think he's mad all the time. So it's one of those things that then I told him, sometimes you just got to start talking to him. Because I think that's one thing that I've realized, because like I said, I don't always smile. And sometimes people think I'm just gruff. I wasn't talking about myself a second ago. I was talking about a different person. But they think I'm gruff. So that's how I just got to communicate with them and talking to people. So they don't always think that I'm gruff. I actually go up and I just start speaking with them and getting their trust and everything.
Yeah. And some people just naturally have a face that's a little bit more crabby looking, and it's just kind of resting. They call it, like, I won't say it on air, but they call it like resting. So when people are really concerned about that, if that's them, then I tell them to practice a little bit and just try to bring your face up a little bit more, more smiling, you know, whatever you can do, or to call it out as such and say, you know, I've worked for people in the past who know that that's how they look. And they just say, listen, I know I look like I'm angry with you right now. I'm not angry. This is just how my face is. And then you get used to that as a, you know, that you have a leader like that.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Just like I said, you got to communicate and build that trust. And like you said, tell them, hey, I'm not mad at you. I just, sometimes I'm not naturally smiling, or you might be thinking of something at the same time you're talking to that person. And that's, something that I've had to teach myself is pull myself away from thinking about that and be present in that situation, as far as being able to communicate with people throughout life and at work.
That's really important, Jason. And I think that's something that many of us, I know I have to work on, it's not just about, are you preparing your next question, right? It's, get ready to share your own story, which is what I just did, but it's about, are you truly really really listening and really really paying attention?
And that's really why I went into Lean, was to try to learn those whole steps, because I always tell people, not only just with standard work, it gives you a tool set to be able to teach people so you can get to a standard but also be creative. I know there's people that talk about when you eliminate chaos from the workplace, not just the workplace, but from life in general, you're actually more creative than you are if you have chaos within your life. It just becomes easier to think about newer things and put those thoughts into place.
Yeah, well, it's difficult to be creative. It's difficult to think divergently when you are reacting. And when when your body is on the defensive, so you need to get yourself in a place of being open, and a little trouble can drive creativity. But if you are sitting in that place where you are reactive and your body is reacting and the adrenaline's rushing, your brain is not particularly capable of doing the divergent thinking, which is what you need to get creativity started.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. That's just to kind of get rid of those things that happen, but you want, like I said, you want a standard work to have some base that you come back to. That way it's easier to think of the things that the firefighting, as we call it, it's easier to think of how to solve those problems if you have something you come back to, a base to come back to.
Shelley, you talk a lot about people being authentic, and I'm thinking about, again, Jason, you have this style, which I think is absolutely perfect for the manufacturing floor, right? I mean, you are a manufacturing guy, and I think you probably walk in there, mm-hmm. even if you walk in looking gruff, you know, people are going, yeah, he's kind of one of us. And so it's okay to be the way you are. Shelley, what does it take for people to really find their own authenticity and maybe stop worrying about what they should do?
Yeah, so it just takes kind of digging deep and figuring out exactly what you want and how you can unlock that. And we so often get in situations where we freeze, like you were talking about earlier, and you know, you close up your body language and you're not, that might not be you, that's you reacting to a situation, right? Either stress or something. I used to take 95, which is a busy, busy road here in Philly, into work in the morning. And, you know, I'd be like white knuckling it the whole drive and get into work and be so stressed out and, you know, jump into a meeting and you bring that into your meeting. So you want to be careful about that. So the first thing to do to kind of unlock that authenticity is just to really be in the moment. I tell my clients, like, before you go into the room, take a deep breath, even if it means you're going to be an extra minute late, just take a deep breath, calm yourself down and put those things away. And just remember that, you know, you can be the brightest person in the world, but if you can't communicate it effectively, no one is going to know that. So you have to really try to own who you are and what you bring in that engagement. And so, you know, being your authentic self, but then also, you know, tweaking it to make yourself more successful. So learning the right communication skills that you need to be able to communicate who you are.
Yeah, I like that. It's funny that you said that, the taking a deep breath. I just, I've been reading the book, Think and Grow Rich. And he talks about in there where some of the guys actually would close their eyes just before they would make a decision, just so they kind of, when they close their eyes, they're visualizing and everything basically closed out. One of my favorite movies of the past was The Perfect Game. I think that's what it's called, with Kevin Costner, where before every pitch, he would say the same, close the mechanism, where the crowd would drown out and everything just disappeared. So he was kind of in that moment as far as being able to speak and everything. So yeah, I like that. And I like the whole white knuckling here in Phoenix. That's one thing that's been nice during this pandemic is no traffic. Well, not no traffic, but less traffic. Yes, yeah. White knuckling is not fun.
No, it's not. It gets you all worked up, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I actually, for a while I was working in the city also, Shelley, and I had to take the Schuylkill Expressway, which was definitely white knuckle at many times. And, you know, when you get to work, then you can kind of feel a little fired up or exhausted or, you know, not ready to get started. But I think there's another piece to commuting, right? Which is when you actually have a commute, which a lot of people don't have at the moment, that can also be a time for mental preparation, for, you know, for listening to calming music, if the traffic's not too bad, enjoying the scenery, and has, you know, create some space. And I'm wondering now, as people are doing so much of what we're doing right now, which is you're on Zoom, right? You've walked from the kitchen to, you know, the space in your house, which is your Zoom space, are you finding that people have less time? I mean, or more time? How is that affecting people? Is there move making that transition from home to who I am at work?
So last week I had a meeting with somebody that I was speaking with that I think some people have less time, some people have more time. It just all depends. I know when she was talking, she had used to be you scheduled in that travel time in between meetings. So you kind of had that buffer zone in between meetings, where now she said that her schedule was basically booked from the time she got to work to the end of the day, because you really don't have to travel anywhere. So you're basically either in your office or at your home, and you can schedule a Zoom meeting back to back to back to back, uh-huh, and not have any buffer in between, where before you had that buffer. So I think people almost have less time as far as being at work, but more time as far as you're not driving between work.
Right.
Yeah. That's what I've seen too. I think people are actually working longer. They're like, their days are like mixing into their nights, and they're just working round the clock. One thing that I've been telling my clients is to still take that commute time. And so if at the start of the day or the end of the day, to just get out and walk around the block, and that's your commute for the day, just to like de-stress and put something between the end of the day and your, you know, your relaxing family time, if you can do it. But, you know, certainly people are working really hard these days.
And I know that's what my wife actually just went back to work last week. We had a baby boy this past November. And I think that's what she's having difficulties with, because of the Zoom calls, they're pretty much their meetings go back to back to back to back. And she doesn't have that drive time where you could kind of de-stress. And even if you're in traffic, sometimes you can de-stress in that. She's got a weird thing where she does de-stress in traffic. I don't. I cannot stand driving on the freeway when it's packed. I just white knuckling it. But that's her time to kind of de-stress at that time. So that's good advice, though. I might give her that advice.
Yeah, please do.
So that's, you know, when, again, you know, we're thinking about, so how do we communicate, right? And everything's changed in the past year, and it's going to change again as, you know, hopefully we get the vaccines out there and we're able to get, you know, more people back into workspaces. Jason, you're going to be traveling again soon. But maintaining or building that sense of who you are as an authentic leader, right? So that you can communicate what you want to communicate. You can create that environment, Jason, that we want in a lean environment, that open environment, that still is going to require that work to do. And I was wondering if each of you could sort of give me you know, a couple of your best tips for how do you keep yourself centered to be that leader, even when everything else is going crazy around you. And Shelley, I'll let you go first.
Yeah, so that's a really good question. I think one thing that you do is to take those moments and those deep breaths and that time for yourself, so that you can stay centered and focusing on the work itself. So if you're going into a Zoom meeting, you know, making sure that you're really in that meeting to the extent that you can be. And I know that we all have other things happening, you know, as we're working from home, but really being there. So having the screen on, having the camera on, I can't tell you how many meetings you go into and somebody turns the camera off right away. And I get it that sometimes you need a little bit of a, you know, break from that, but if you're there, then I can see you, then I can hear you. I know that you're engaged with me. So I really feel like you're in the room with me. So that's one thing. And then just being consistent as a leader. I think, you know, we all have our moments where things are a little bit chaotic, but to the extent that you can be consistent, so that means that you're consistent in your nonverbals as well as your communication. So, you know, if you're telling people that everything's fine, but you've got your arms crossed and you're giving them a glare, then it's probably not fine. So just call it out as that, right? And just be consistent, because when there's consistency there, that's when people really start to kind of feel this uneasiness with the leader and what's happening. So you need to try to marry that consistency, and that can help as well.
Okay. Yeah. Consistency is a big key, regardless of whether you're a leader of a sports team or a leader of a manufacturing facility or a leader of a corporate office. You got to have that consistency. It's one of those things that everybody wants a leader that they can understand and not have to walk on eggshells going into the office because they don't know what they're going to get from time to time. I think there's actually a joke about that as far as, or there was a sitcom that talked about it. Well, what's he like today before they entered the office? And if he was upset, they didn't go in. If he was not upset, they went in, type of thing. So that more than likely my wife would be able to tell me, but I believe there's a show that does that, that talks about that as far as somebody going into the office. As far as my communication and helping people out through communication, I like what Shelley says about being consistent. One of the things I learned throughout the years, when I first started out in the manufacturing field, I worked in a foundry, which is hot. And sometimes when you get to moving fast in super extreme heat, your body gets to the point where your heart's going 90 miles an hour. So you got to kind of take that. When people ask you questions, you just look at them and let them know, hey, just give me 1 second so I can answer your question. And then we can go from there. And then just taking those breaks to get away from people. Yeah, you want to be able to help people out all a lot of the time, but you also need to take a break. Like Shelley said, have time to yourself. Whether it's just kind of going outside, taking a break, calming down, getting away from everything, not having to think about it all the time. I believe I read a story yesterday or the day before that talked about people that work on the front line or carpenters and stuff like that usually have it easier to de-stress than people that are constantly using the knowledge workers. As far as knowledge workers are always thinking about stuff, so usually the de-stressing doesn't go away as fast as the people that aren't always thinking about that end of the work as far as that goes.
That's really interesting. Yeah that's wow. And here I go again telling my own story. So I remember many years ago I was on a mission trip to Honduras, and we were working helping to build houses, and I got assigned to the cement block factory. I know nothing about cement blocks, but my job was basically, you know, they would pour the cement into these molds, and my job was, when they were dry, was taking them out of the molds. And once you learn how to do it, it was pretty easy. And I found it to be the most relaxing work I had ever done, right? Yeah. It was great, you know, compared to a lot of the work which I do, which is, you know, pretty much, you know, what are you thinking about, and how are you, you know, changing a process, something like that. And, you know, there are a lot of things to think about, which is kind of wake you up at 2 o'clock in the morning kind of stuff, you know, if it's not going well and you can ruminate on it. I don't think, you know, taking the molds off a concrete block that you would ever wake up in the middle of the night worrying about that. That's interesting, you know, to think about how do we get that, more of that in our lives, of not, you know, just things that are that where we are. Go ahead, Jason.
And that's my biggest worry with the whole Zoom thing, like you was talking, Shelley, and I was saying earlier, sometimes I think with Zoom, everybody's at work. I know I've talked to people that sometimes they actually take vacation away from their area, but they're still working, especially right now with the whole Zoom, because you can go pretty much anywhere and be connected as far as that goes. So it's one of those things that I think that's my biggest worry with Zoom, is everybody's going to be at work. And you're constantly going to be working. I should say, you're not really enjoying being with your family or being in that moment and everything.
Yeah. And the funny thing about Zoom is that we are very close here sitting. So from a nonverbal perspective, we would never sit across the table looking at each other this closely in a meeting. And so it's really intimate. In some ways, it's a very intimate engagement, more so than it would be in the office. So the benefit of that, though, is that I think when we do get back to the office, people are actually going to feel a little bit more connected, because not only have you been on Zoom close, but you've also been through this bonding moment together. So hopefully it brings some teams together.
Yeah. It helps them. Yes. Yeah. To be able to communicate, because they've had to adjust their communication style.
Absolutely.
I know people that are training people that just got hired on, as far as I know a couple of people that just got hired on like in March, and in March everything shut down, and they're still trying to learn their job as far as that goes. And usually you were able to go grab somebody to give you a hand and show you what was going on, where now it's sometimes the communication has to get to the point where it's better across Zoom, as far as there's nobody there to help and you got to depend on yourself, but also you have to depend on the person that's training you to communicate that to you, as far as that goes. And sometimes through Zoom, it's not as easy to communicate.
So you have to work harder.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow. So maybe when we all get back into our offices and plants would be have a whole bunch of people who actually are closer, as you said, Shelley, and Babs, have learned some new communication skills as well. Yeah. Be interesting to see what happens as we move forward.
It is going to be interesting.
Shelley, I'm so interested in what you say about, the nonverbals and how you sort of present yourself. And it's not so much about necessarily about what you're wearing, but how you present yourself and whether you look open, whether people feel that you are interested in them, things like that. And Jason, thinking about where we started with this idea of, things like standard work documentation, visual management boards, it seems to me that there's some kind of an equivalent there, right? That you can have these things, these artifacts that help us communicate, even when, if we're not there, saying, you move this thing 3 degrees, whatever the instruction is. And in a way, there's sort of nonverbals with those too, right? With whether they're readable, the colors that you use. What are the ways that we could make them, friendlier and more open?
I would say the biggest thing to help make them more friendly and more open, as far as having your standard work, is talking with the person at the job, as far as communicating with them to see what their thoughts are as far as the process. I know a lot of times your standard work are usually going to be cookie cutter across all the jobs, so bring everybody together within that facility so they understand what you're doing, how you're doing it, and also communicate how they would like to visually see it and get a consensus as far as what they would like to see, what makes it easiest for everybody to read. And that's one of the biggest things with standard work, is having that consensus as far as what makes it easy for everybody to understand. You don't want to have 6 different people doing 6 different things on the same job. You want to make sure everybody's pretty much following the same standard work. That way you can create that creativity as far as eliminating that chaos, and people can find new ways and better ways to improve their job or solve problems that they're having every day, as far as that goes. But yeah, just to have something that is very standard, as I should say, just a standard to set across the all facilities that are all workspaces, and making sure everybody understands what it is and how to read it, and make sure you're updating it when there are changes being made.
Right. That's really important. I mean, certainly that's always a challenge with any type of documentation, because as soon as life changes, and as it does, people start doing things in a different way, and then what it says on the document and what they're doing is different, and then they start to ignore the document even more. But it sounds like what you're saying is it can be more friendly in a way if it was created by friends, right? So if people worked on it together and they own it, as opposed to it, here's your standard work and you all just follow it, which is kind of more the old way of doing SOP, standard operating procedures. That was the way that it used to be. So it's a sense, it's a shared a
shared document. It's just like everything within most facilities. You want everybody to share the jobs and not, how do I say it? Another reason I always like Lean is because usually everything is brought out to be a win-win situation. It's not a win-lose. You got to do it this way. You got to do it this way. It's more of a win-win situation where you have to come to that compromise. And I, not just in everyday life, I think that's a lot of what's going on in our world right now is nobody compromises with each other. So there's a lot of stuff that just doesn't get done because everybody wants to win and there's a winner and a loser. Now, is there always going to be a win-win situation? No, but usually within that Lean, you want a win-win situation. And with standard work, when you compromise and everybody comes together, usually you're doing a win-win situation to where everybody understands sometimes you got to make a sacrifice and not do it this way, but at least everybody agrees on a certain way of doing things.
Yeah, especially if it's focused on this work is going to deliver something that is for our customers, right? It's not just for us.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. All right. So I just would like to hear from each of you your one piece of advice for a young person just starting out in their career. So Jason, you want to go first, and Shelley, we'll let you wrap up.
The one piece of advice is just to, well, I've got a couple. I'm sorry. But my biggest one is read. I know when I was younger, probably in my early 20s and 30s, reading, working in a factory and everything, and coming from where I come from, reading was a faux pas for men or boys at that time, just because you always thought you knew everything. You thought you was tougher than the world, so you didn't read. And my biggest advice is to read. I mean, over the probably the past 4 or 5 years, I've probably read at least 30 or 40 books a year. So it's one of those things I've learned a lot over the last 3 or 4 years, just from reading and grabbing good books and getting to understand more than just what I thought I always knew type of things. And then always try to find somebody within your field to mentor you, to go to get advice from, just to help you with any problems that you might not be able to solve. They might be able to have an answer for you, or they might use it as they talk about the Lean, be a sensei as far as teaching you through doing the problem and kind of guiding you to that answer.
Wow, great advice. Shelley?
Yeah, that's hard to follow. So my advice would be similar in that just being curious and trying to learn your whole life. I think the older you get, the more you realize you don't know things. And so you're constantly, if you can be curious and constantly try to learn, that just sets you up to have an interesting career and be open to the twists and turns that happen in your career and be willing to say yes. And I think, one of my biggest pieces of advice is that if someone tells you can't do something, it doesn't mean that you can't do it. It just typically means you can't do it with them. So think about how you get there and who you bring on board for your journey in your career.
Well, that's great advice too. Yeah, Shelley O'Donovan, where can people find you?
So they can find me at authenticinfluencegroup.com. And you can find me on LinkedIn too, Shelley O'Donovan. And that those are probably the best places to find me.
Great. Thanks. Jason, how about you?
You can find me on LinkedIn at Jason Haynes, spelled H-A-I-N-E-S. I always have to explain that because there's, I think, 3 or 4 different names of the Haynes's. The long story short, our family had feuds back through the day, and that's how our names changed. Or you can find us at isiworld.net, where our company is started out at Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Great. All right. So we have covered a lot of ground here with written and verbal and nonverbal communication and quite a few stops in between. So I want to thank you both for traveling with me to the edges of Lean.
Thank you, too.
Thank you so much. It's been fun.
Thanks.
This is Bella Engelbeck, and I'd like to thank Shelley O'Donovan and Jason Haynes for being my guests on the Edges of Lean. How are you communicating? Shelley, Jason, and I would love to hear back from you on your thoughts and ideas. Find us on LinkedIn. Please join me in exploring more of the edges of Lean. There's a lot to learn. And check out my friends in the Lean Communicators community at leancommunicators.com. You'll find more podcasts and videos with lots of great new content every week. The Edges of Lean is written and produced by Bella Engelbach. This is a Lean for Humans production.